Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. Talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Oh my, Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. Annie Hart bringing us in. Coming up later in the show of famed Avoir Simone and working on her second baby project, which we're pretty pumped about. I'm one half of your host, Darren Bresnitz. Shout out to Greg Bresnitz. Joining us in the hot seat is Carter Adams.
Hello.
Beard's looking good.
Thank you.
Yeah, strong beard look.
Yeah, it's that super spring beard.
Yeah, it's that beard you want when it's like 80 degrees outside.
Which is basically today.
Today. Thank God, summer's finally here.
It's my Coachella beard.
Oh my God. Haven't watched it since Florence broke her foot. Topical joke. Topical joke. Super pumped. Summer's back, which means we're all looking at barbecue, grilling, and who better to get us in the mood for the barbecue season is Joe Carroll, Fett Sal, Saint Assam, Spite and Dival. James Beard nodded, Samia, and
right.
Nick Fauchel. Got it? Boom.
Got it.
Phonetics. Welcome to the show, boys. Welcome back. I can only imagine what the lines are like at Fett Sal today.
It's Bump. Busy.
Yeah?
I
busy?
I assume.
You assume.
It is busy. I was over there earlier. The garden at Spoot and Dival is very nice today.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
We lost our fig tree this winter.
Are you dead?
Yeah, man.
Pour one out.
Super bummed.
What happened? Just too cold?
You know, it got pretty banged up last winter.
Oh,
after last winter, we lost maybe a third of it.
Wow.
And it just, we were worried about it after this winter. And a couple of weeks ago, I saw it in the entire trunk all the way up split. I think it must have frozen on who knows. I don't know. It's a shame though. It's old fig tree.
Yeah,
we still got a cherry tree back there and tons of grapevines. And
you take that fig tree out behind the woodshed.
Yeah,
give it an old yeller send off.
No, I'm going to cut it down and I'm going to use it in the smoker. Actually, at Fett.
Oh,
yeah.
Waste not, want not.
That's right.
So you guys are on here talking about your first cookbook and new cookbook,
right.
One and the same. Feeding the Fire, 20 different methods of grilling, barbecuing, all things like that.
Lessons
learned. I like the press release. It's like, he's not from the South. He's not some great descendant of barbecue.
Right.
Like,
it's true.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. So why this book? Why write this?
I had to write something.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming. I really appreciate it.
Great.
It was a matter of, highlighting what we were doing at both Fête de Sal and St. Anselm.
Yeah.
That's slow cooking meat and fast cooking meat, barbecuing and grilling. And it's funny, they're kind of on the opposite ends of the spectrum as far as cooking methods go, but they're weirdly linked that, well, first of all, they're meat-driven things, but they're really like, they're summertime things, they're outdoor things, they're things that you do for large groups of people. And I think it's why, like, the word barbecue gets corroborated into, like, corrupted into, like, meaning grilling, too.
Yeah. Yeah, so what would you say is the method for beginners? What is, if you're going to ease into this, what is something where people, where you go, like, if you want grilled meat, you want some of that smoky flavor, this is where you start?
Well, when it comes to grilling, start with fattier cuts, more forgiving cuts. When it comes to barbecue, stay away from beef until you kind of hone your skills a bit.
Really?
Yeah, why is that?
Beef is tough, man. Beef is a difficult animal to barbecue. In general, it's harder to get any kind of smoke into the meat, and it takes longer to break down all of the connective tissue, all of the collagen that's in the meat. And when it comes to things like brisket in particular, brisket, you have the couple of things going against you. One, that it's beef, and the other, that it's a weirdly shaped piece of meat. It's not even in any way.
Right.
Really thin, lean end, really thick, fatty end. So kind of dealing with that stuff can be a pain. It's difficult to nail it, to really get it to come out right. And learning how far you have to go with cooking something before the collagen is really broken down, all that connective tissue is really broken down, is way past when the meat is done. So there's also this sort of discipline that you have to learn, especially when it comes to beef, because it takes that much longer.
And that line, that window between undercooked and overcooked is a lot
small,
tighter with
beef.
Small?
Yeah, with beef in particular.
Pork shoulder is a good place to start.
Yeah, pork is really much more forgiving.
Pork shoulder is forgiving
as
nothing else.
And delicious.
So delicious.
Lamb's a good place to start.
So, being in New York, and some people are lucky enough to have a grill outside, but I know that you have some methods for cooking with fire inside.
a few things. It's look, I'm not going to, you know, try to pull the wool over anyone's eye. It's not the same thing. It's not it's not doing it outdoors, and barbecuing in particular indoors is definitely a you know, the shades away from what it really is if you have the ability to do it outside. But there's, of course, there's ways of pulling it off. There's ways of setting up kind of an indoor smoker, you know, on your stovetop or in your oven. And there's also, you know, fuel to use that aren't necessarily logs, obviously.
Yeah.
And I don't mean just wood chips. You know, using tea, for example, like tea smoked duck is a wonderful thing. If you, again, living in New York, you know, lots of New Yorkers are familiar with it. And that's, look, you know, it's not exactly barbecue, but it's definitely smoking meat, you know.
Duck's about the biggest thing I would smoke inside.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You want to stay, I mean, you want to stay small. You don't have the, you know, indoors, it's, you know, to pull a brisket off indoors with really smoking, it is.
I mean, that's 12, 16 hours.
Yeah, man. Plus the time, right?
Yeah.
If you're lucky enough to have a fireplace, though, and I am one of those people lucky enough to have a fireplace at home, I use that all the time for grilling.
Really?
Yeah, grilling.
Inside?
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's badass, too. If you get, like, what's called a Tuscan grill, right? That's what you use indoors?
Yeah, it's just an iron grate.
Right.
It's really simple. It's like a $10 little cast iron thing. You make a fire, wait till it gets down to some coals, and throw that over it, and you have an amazing hot grill.
What's your favorite grilling accessory that you've stumbled across when working on this book?
For me, I mean, outside of great tongs, really great tongs, I love grill baskets of all different sorts, because it allows you to do a lot of items that grill really well, but that aren't the easiest thing to do on just a, you know, plain naked grill.
Such as?
All different vegetables, fish, seafood, small seafood, like, you know.
It's like having a skillet.
Yeah.
You can cook anything in a skillet. A grill basket does the same thing on the grill. It's great. You introduced me to that.
Yeah,
I
really
for that.
Both styles, too. The ones, as Nick mentioned, that are more like a, you know, skillet shaped, and then other ones that kind of close down, clamp down, and you can do a lot of, you know, various seafood in all at once, and they kind of lock in there, so they're not going to shift around and move around. You flip them easily.
There's a great recipe in the book. It's just a bunch of seafood, herbs, lemons, a bunch of other stuff, and you just toss it in the grill basket, and it's like a 5-minute, 10-minute thing. It's easy.
It probably takes longer to build the fire than to cook it.
Yep. Exactly. Right.
How much time should you give to build a proper fire?
I mean, I guess there's a lot of variables there, but
you got grilling, about a half hour start from when you light the coals to when you're ready to start grilling.
Absolutely. Okay. Especially if you're dealing with charcoal in particular.
Yeah. So in researching this book, what was the most unique, crazy, never thought of, never heard of grilling barbecue method that just blew your mind?
Jeez,
no pressure.
I don't.
This stuff's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. And
what did we see on the road? Did we see anything weird? A lot of shitty stuff.
Yeah.
Really? All right. We can talk about that. What were some of the shitty things? Those are always fun.
People using scrap lumber and plywood and stuff full of chemicals.
No, come on.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All over the country. Yeah.
Yeah. Cheap. Cheap.
Just cheap, like chemically treated plywood.
Yeah. I mean, just any kind of scrap wood they could get their hands on. You know.
Would you eat that meat?
We did.
Body is a temple.
Would I eat it frequently? No, but like, you know, we're on the road, and unfortunately, one of the sad things is that, you know, there's a lot of great barbecue out in the South and the West, but predominantly it's all kind of
a lot less than we think there is.
Yeah,
it's hard to find sometimes.
What, good barbecue?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's few and far between. Even down south, you know, even in the most famous of places, it's few and far between.
Look, the thing about barbecue is that it's, you know, it can be really cheap. I mean, real cheap meat, cheap wood, cheap everything.
Absolutely.
Know? And you see, like, you know, chopped brisket in a shack, and you're like, wow, this is so cheap. And you go, yeah, yeah, it is cheap.
Right. It is cheap meat.
This is cheap meat.
It's hard to make cheap meat good.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, I'm so excited to see New York really remove the urban barbecue, the urban part of it.
Right.
It's just barbecue now.
Right.
I mean, it's really just become such a real barbecue town.
But I think the defining characteristic of New York barbecue or a lot of city barbecue is the using better ingredients, using better meat.
Oh, of course.
That itself will set it apart from 95% of else is out there.
Yeah, but then the flip is, you hear people can be like, I can't believe New York barbecue so expensive, blah, blah, blah.
Well,
blah,
right.
Blah. Yeah.
There's also rent.
Oh, well, yeah, and also ventilation and things
right,
like
all
that.
All that stuff. You know, Mike Mills, who is a barbecue legend, amazing guy, like just absolutely wonderful person. In his book, Peace, Love, and Barbecue, he talks about getting involved with Danny Meyer and Blue Smoke. And one of the things that at the time, now this is going back, I don't know, 15 years ago or so, right? Maybe more. One of the things that he was so surprised at was how they were going to do everything from scratch at Blue Smoke. They were going to make their desserts from scratch. And this is coming from one of the best guys in the business.
Right.
Really. So there is this, you know, method of doing things that has happened for so long. And unfortunately, you know, post-World War II has changed a lot, you know, made convenience and people took shortcuts and all this stuff. And it's nice to see things pushing back the other way, finally. But, you know, again, 99% of the places you go to, even the most legendary places, they're taking these shortcuts. They're, you know, they're using store-bought sauce or, you know.
Does barbecue go back that far, pre-World War II?
Oh, are you kidding?
I mean, obviously grilled meat, but like barbecue, the way that we think about barbecue.
Look, barbecue and its roots goes back very far.
Colonial.
But I mean, the way we look at barbecue today, really goes back to colonial times or just post-colonial.
Huh.
Yeah. It's very old. It was, in fact, it was much more ubiquitous than we think it was, and the way we view it today, it was done in the North frequently and all the time, and for political fundraisers and all sorts of different things.
I know about the beefsteak.
Well, beefsteak is another function that was a political fundraiser, but actual barbecues. You know, if you go back and do the research, you'll find, you know, sort of postings in newspapers for barbecues in like Vermont for like political fundraisers, you know, where they're doing a, you know, whole hog or whole cows, you know, sides of beef at a time.
Yeah. Give me barbecue, give me death.
Right.
Something like that.
Right.
So, you know, I know that at Feta Sal and at Spine Dive, it's all really about whiskey, beer, things like that, but you end your book with wine.
Right. So there's
being a pairing, which I know, Carter, you're a huge fan of wine and.
Yeah, I mean, I love wine, but also, like, you think of, when I think of, like, St. Anselm, I'm like, oh, wow, this is a steakhouse for people who actually like wine, you know? Right. Not necessarily, it's not your classic, oh, you've got, you know, your Bordeaux blends and everything like that.
Silver.
You go and have really fun with it.
It's one of the quirkiest wine lists anywhere, but definitely in Brooklyn.
I am. You know, it's funny, in putting that wine list together, I never thought twice about it. It's really a reflection of two things, what I love to drink and also what I think is going to go best with the menu there.
Yeah, sure.
And I never really thought about it much. And then as we were open for a while and people started talking about the wine list and writing about it or talking to me about it, they would point out that it's kind of odd. Wine list.
Yeah, you would never think put you'd see like Vangeaune in a you know, on the wine list at a steakhouse. But yeah, it's really good, you know.
And that's, you know, the way I gotta say, it wasn't really done on purpose. There was no master plan here, but the way things broke down when I opened Spite and Dival, it was very beer focused, and we were doing, you know, a lot of cured meats. That's really the thing there. We don't have a proper kitchen there, and then Fête de Sal became smoked meats and whiskey, American whiskey. That's the whole focus.
And great
that
beer.
Program. And great beer, no question. But the beer wasn't the focus.
No, the whiskey is. Yeah.
We have 10 taps, 9 of which are beer, craft beer, and that's it. There's no other beer.
What's that 10th tap?
It's cider. Mm. I always have cider at every place in some form or another. And then when Anselm opened, it was grilled meats and wine. Wine became the focus there.
It's so awesome. I love St. Anselm.
Nice, thank you.
It's always funny to see people who go there and like, no, it's a steakhouse, but you always got to be like, it's not like any other steakhouse you've ever seen. Because people, when they think of steakhouse, they think of Keen's or Peter Luger.
Awesome. I love those places,
which
but
is
it's
great.
Not that. Yeah.
But it's not that. Right. But I'm like you're going to get one of the best steaks you'll ever have. It's just not going to be a 90-year-old waiter named Gus.
No, it's true. But yet, I mean, like, yeah, you think I've sent so many people to St. Anselm.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's like that's the place. It's like, well, where do you want to go? Like, what's the Williamsburg restaurant? You know, we have some, like, switch it up. It's like, go to St. Anselm, nice. Get the hanger steak.
Have some of them
get the mashed
actually
potatoes.
Gotten in to eat?
Yeah. Well, you know, you send them early.
You send them early.
Or you just go and you get on the list, you know, and then you go next door to Spoon Dival.
Yeah.
Actually, my girlfriend was like, if you're talking to Joe Carroll today, ask him like if there's like a secret to the 2-hour wait.
Nice.
I was like, I'll work on it.
You know, we just started this weekend, actually. We were doing brunch, and it was like a brunch menu, very brunchy menu. And it was fun putting that together. And we took, obviously, some components from the normal menu. But we just this weekend stopped doing the brunch menu and just started doing our menu
for brunch.
Because that's what everyone was asking.
That's what everyone's wanting. They're like, it's like, I got it in Feta Sal. It's like, you can't get what you came for.
Right.
But you can get poached eggs. You're like,
okay.
Okay. Well, thank you. One last question.
Sure.
Favorite all-time grilled summer combo, meat, drink, what do you like? What's the one thing you want to put together?
I always lean towards seafood on the grill in the summer. It's just, you know, all the right things. It's you know, it's works great on the grill. Plus, I just love, like, I tend to eat more seafood in the summer, particularly shellfish. I think shellfish works so well on the grill. And then, man, you can go in so many different directions with, from like Chablis to Sauvignon Blanc to champagne. I mean, you really can't go wrong with champagne ever. So
you cannot. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming by, for continuing to add awesome things to Williamsburg restaurants and everything.
Thanks.
And the book is out on Artisan. Thanks, Patrick, for setting this up. Always a big fan of the PR dudes. The men and women behind the show who makes this happen. Who go, man, I need a guest. And someone goes, do you need someone for this weekend? So Feeding the Fire out on May 12th.
That's right.
Super pumped.
Yeah.
Pre-order on Amazon?
Of course.
I'm assuming so.
Yeah.
Yes? Absolutely. Is that a yes? Okay. Yeah. All right, cool. All right. Well, we got the wonderful ladies of Brutal Magazine coming up next, talking about all amazing stuff. Quick note, I got engaged this week. Super pumped.
It was last week, actually.
It was last week, a week ago.
I forgot already.
Your timing on this whole engagement thing is so weird.
So
you're the only person I've ever met that was looking at venue contracts before the ring was on the finger.
Fact. And we just put in our contract on Friday. But anyway, this one goes out to Anna, who I love, and I'm happy that we're engaged here on Snacky Tunes.
With beer. and belly says, baby, baby, I'll be gone. You fooled me once or twice, but the boy inside can't unwind. Maybe, maybe I'll go home.
That song, so good. Great show at Coachella. I think I saw Card Out in GA the entire time, right?
Totally there.
Just deep in the mix of, you know, just camping, walking around with no shoes.
Super dusty.
Oh, my God.
Festival beard.
I saw so many people with no shoes on at Coachella, and
it's disgusting.
It's so gross. just gross. Oh, before I forget, Heritage Radio has an awesome Kickstarter going on. We are rebuilding our new website to make it easier to find shows and to spread the love and have more news and have it not look like it was built in 2002. So go to Kickstarter, search Heritage Radio Network. A lot of awesome gifts if you support. We need a new website.
I don't know. 2002 was kind of like the heyday of the internet for me, so it all went down until after that.
Was it Dancing Hamster? Was that what it was? Flying Toasters?
Actually, the Flying Toaster, I haven't thought about that in a minute, but that was good.
I'm surprised I've never seen someone with a flying toaster tattoo.
I'm sure there's out there.
I'm sure it's out there. Well, I want to welcome to Snacky Tunes the lovely women, ladies of Brutal Mag.
Yay.
Which is, might be, Brutal Magazine, which might be one of the best names for a food magazine.
Thank you.
Where did you, yeah. I mean, yes. story behind the name of the magazine?
Well... We had talked about doing something together for a long time. We didn't know the format or how it would like kind of go into play. But then we started talking about doing this magazine, and it was actually like one moment. I remember my parents were in town. Mm-hmm. We were sitting on the couch having breakfast, and we were just flicking through like magazines and newspapers, and I'm like, oh. Like, this is what we're going to do. So I'm like calling John up. I'm like, dude, you have to meet me at the local coffee store. I have something that I want to like pitch to you. So we met up, and that was kind of like the start. And Brutal, the name, I think.
We were tossing out a ton of names, really. And it was really the only one that felt right.
Yeah.
I originally kind of laughed at it, and then it actually really just dawned on us how right it was.
Yeah.
In a way.
I remember one name that was like up there for a long
what
time.
Was it?
Ritual.
Mm. And it was just so perfect.
I think you chose right. I made the right choice.
I think you chose right. I think Ritual, I would have been like, brr.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right?
It's a little heavy.
Yeah.
Like, Brutal for being heavy actually has like a fun place at it.
Yeah.
Like, it's energetic and...
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly what we want.
Yeah. So, for those who are not familiar with Brutal Magazine, and there's one issue out, another issue coming out in about 2 weeks?
Yeah. Very soon, yes.
Very soon. What is Brutal Magazine? Why... three-part question. For those who don't know Brutal Magazine, what is it? Why put out... an actual physical magazine, and what are you saying it's different than any other food magazine right now? Oof. Answer it in any way you want.
You go on the first one.
What was the first one?
What is it?
Brutal is a food and art and fashion magazine. It's a fun magazine. Food is the common thread. I think it will always be the main topic, but we have other passions that we want to express and so it's a little bit of everything, but I think food is our medium and how we want to have fun with it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay.
Second question.
Physical magazine. Why?
That's the biggest question.
Yeah. I mean, I think for us it was a discussion to have kind of early on because we were supposed to be just a blog. And then we got really good names and, you know, I was like, well, this kind of deserves more than just... you know, a blog, another blog. So we scrambled our money together and got 300 copies printed.
That's a good number.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's all right. I mean, I think we were so naive to like, geez, we can just do this. And then we just had to make it happen. basically. So, but I think the question that we get a lot is like, why are you doing a printed magazine? Like, you know, that's just stupid. And I don't think it is. It's just more about what content you put out there. I think, you know, print is still relevant. It's just what you decide to choose your money on. So, yeah, hopefully Brutal can be part of that movement to, you know, kind of make people more aware of what they're actually reading about.
Yeah. I think magazine culture still exists in the same way that vinyl collecting and 7-inch culture exists. I think there's people who still really support it and love it.
Absolutely.
And then finally, in such a diluted, crowded marketplace as food magazines, why what are you saying differently?
I think we have a lot of humor.
It's a lot of fun with it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think fun is the... I mean, not that other magazines are unfun, but I think we just do it... No, not at all.
No, I don't think anyone was thinking that. I don't think anyone...
No, but I don't want to...
Fire.
Well, you start... You preface the entire question by saying, in a diluted, crowded food magazine world.
That's not negative. It's just a lot of people saying a lot of things.
No, it's just... it's our way of expressing how we have fun with food and...
How do you have fun with food?
Well, we play around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're different because we have the visual aesthetics that we choose to have is different. I think it's important for us to not take ourselves too seriously. It can open up a lot of creative paths and collaborations. So I think... For us, it was just kind of because, you know, you have food magazines there and they're doing a great thing, but we can't do the same thing again and think that we're going to, like, top that, you know? What is out there is already there.
Yeah.
And so we needed to find our own voice in it. So that's how we do it.
So how long did it take to put out the first one, and then how long has it taken to put out the second one?
Mm. Well, we had that talk in April, so pretty much a year ago, and then we... printed. We had it in our hands printed beginning of August of last year.
That's a really good turnaround. It's a lot of late nights and weekends.
We had the momentum and we ran with it.
We did it.
So the second one was a lot faster then?
Actually, yeah. It was a little bit... Well, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, then you kind of know more about, you know, how long it will take to produce and all that stuff. So we... I think we started producing, the first story was like in mid-January. Yeah. And then we kind of wrapped it in mid-March.
Mid to late March.
Yeah. But we did so many other like things on the side with this issue, so it took us longer to kind of like make it all sharp and strong.
Because you do events on the side. You do events with the magazine as well, right?
Yes.
A lot of collaborations and events.
What's your favorite event? What have you done that you really were proud of?
Proud of everything.
Of course you're proud of everything, but one that was... five events?
I think what I would like to highlight would be the Brutal Juice dinner party that we did with David Tanis and Gerardo Gonzalez.
See, Brutal Juice just sounds awesome.
Yeah. It was awesome.
If you say that three times, does it appear?
Exactly. That was a part of our like copy for one of our Instagram promotions, too,
Brutal Juice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was the event?
That was a dinner that we had in collaboration with Nicholas Morgenstern and Gerardo Gonzalez from El Rey and David Tanis. We got this space on Howard Street for two nights, and we kind of made this jungle thing installation on top of the whole table. And... you know, just went for it with like plants and weird flowers and
neon lights.
Yeah. And then the menu was kind of, you know, also Brutal Juice. So it was, you can tell maybe a little bit more about the food.
A little bit was, David Tanis and Gerardo collaborated on the menu. It was very Mexican themed and oriented. The vegan chicharrones from El Rey was on there, which is just incredible.
What are they made out of?
Nutritional yeast.
Whoa.
Which is, you know, like everybody's in on that right now.
And
yeah, they're delicious.
So, chicharrones that are good for you.
Yeah.
Down.
Yeah,
so good for you.
Totally down. So, what's the theme for Brutal number two?
It's called Stripped.
Okay.
And it's all about, you know, stripping it down, what makes sense to the people that we are interviewing, kind of like getting things down to the core and talking about real stuff instead of all the fluff and mumbo jumbo. So, yeah,
what's important and what really matters.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
You have a website, right?
Yes.
Which is?
Brutalmag.com. And I just want to say, we have a release party for the second issue in about 2 weeks.
Okay.
So keep...
You guys can come and dance.
Yes.
Yeah.
And hang out.
So check out our Instagram, Brutal Magazine, or our website, or our Facebook.
I cannot believe that Brutal Magazine was not taken.
Hey, listen, sometimes
not,
it just...
Sometimes
it's so right.
It's so right.
Yeah, everything comes together.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
I'll see you on the dance floor.
Awesome. Yes.
We got Annie Hart coming up next, live. Are you ready?
Well, I don't have anything, like, plugged in or turned on.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get that sorted. It's so good. That is 100% Greg the Mind's total sweet spot for music. Annie, welcome back to the Snacky Tunes.
Hi.
It's so good to see you.
It's so nice to see you.
And it's so funny because when Radical Dads, who are so awesome, who are also about to drop a kid.
Two kids.
So many play dates.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? No?
They're moving.
Oh, they're moving?
Robbie's moving to California, and then Chris and Lindsay are moving to New Jersey, so I'm just going to cry.
Oh, man.
I'm just going to stay home and cry.
And Heather's in San Francisco?
Heather's in San Francisco. What do I have left in my life?
I don't know, just like a handsome husband and two beautiful children. And your music?
Oh, yeah. And cooking.
And cooking. So I guess nothing. Welcome back. It's so good to see you. I always love seeing you. But it was funny because I guess you were sitting down when I saw you, and I didn't realize that you're like 2 weeks from dropping this kid.
Yeah.
And then when I saw you, I was like, she is very pregnant.
Yeah.
But like in the most beautiful way possible.
Oh, thank you.
So welcome.
Thanks.
So happy.
Ditto.
Solo project.
Solo project.
Which was a surprise. It was just on my, I think, I want to say either Facebook feed or Instagram feed or something that I was like, oh, she's doing a song. And I was like, it's a good song.
Oh, thank you.
Can't Stop, Won't Stop.
Can't Stop, Won't Stop. It's like Heather's gone. You can't have a trio and downgrade to a duo without betraying the essence of the trio, so you kind of just have to go it alone.
You could start a new group called Heather Moved Away.
Heather Moved Away, and I hate it.
First song is Whatever. So what made you want to do the solo project?
Well, it's kind of like I started playing music because I just have always been hypnotized by music. I've always been obsessed with just playing by myself. And I never thought anybody in the whole world would ever want to hear it. And then I've been encouraged over the years to either join bands or was literally forced to join my first band. And then, you know, I came to this place where why am I going to be alone playing synthesizers? There's more to honor the synthesizers that I've been spending so much money on than anything else. I feel like if you have these ideas, you should share them.
Yeah. It's like honoring your sushi knife.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so I told you about my sushi knife. I went to Kyoto. We were on tour. Au revoir, Simone was on tour.
I did not know that.
Okay,
go on.
And we're in Japan. And I found, so there's this, oh, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's Aritsugu or something. There's like a very famous sushi knife place in Kyoto. But then apparently, that's just like the tourist trap one.
Okay.
But there's this dude who's like 90 years old. Mm-hmm. And I had to take a taxi really far out of town. He is right across from this temple, so I guess a lot of people go there. But he doesn't speak English. And you have to like, he makes these knives. He forges these knives in his backyard and sells them to anybody who wants a knife.
And you got one.
I got one. And it was great because I'm mostly vegetarian, so I mostly cut up vegetables, and we were drawing pictures and miming. He taught me how to sharpen the knife. You know, I don't know. It was great. And ever since then, I've been obsessed with this knife. It's so sharp.
So sharp. Those cucumbers, so thin.
So thin.
So thin. Do you want to play a song for us?
Yeah.
What do you want to play for us first?
I guess I'll play Breathing Underwater. Breathing Underwater, even though you already played it at the intro.
Yeah, but that was a recorded one. Put a little live.
This is different keyboards.
Okay. Are you all set up with your microphone and everything? Do I have to do anything? Let me see.
Let me just check.
Oh, you're good.
I can feel the feeling of your face on my
Thank you.
Thanks.
You can talk on that microphone.
Yeah. You like my?
Oh, Liz is saying no. Oh, Taskmaster Liz.
All right, I'm back.
Oh my goodness.
I can handle this.
Yep. Whipped it.
So, how is the writing process now with just you without the trio? I mean, are you like, you're like, I'm going to put this sound here?
Well, I got to say, it's really hard because I've been so reliant on Heather and Erica to kind of... You are so sweet.
We're just playing musical chairs. There we go.
Kind of literally.
I like that.
it's funny because when I work with Heather and Erica, I have them to rely on about like what sounds good and what doesn't sound good, mm-hmm. and we're all so brutally honest with each other that it makes it really easy to trust them and to trust yourself. But it's kind of like, oh, this sounds great. Oh, that sounds great. But I did notice that most of my songs have become incredibly simple.
Really? Oh, because you're just focusing on just getting it out?
Or just like, this sound sounds good.
Right, and then you're done. You move on. You don't have that feedback that people be like, actually, it sounds good, but maybe.
Yeah, plus there's not six hands. There's only like, I have two hands. And yes, I'll have like 10 tracks of keyboards, but, you know, it's easy.
It's easy. This track sounds done. Let's go.
But
next.
Then learning to record is really difficult.
Oh, when you're by yourself?
Yeah, and also dinner time is a problem because I have my studio in my basement.
Yeah.
And the kitchen is right upstairs, and so you're just like, oh, I don't really feel like comping. You know, it'd be really great using my new Japanese chef knife.
Oh, it's yeah. True. Man, it's the same creative process, right?
No.
No?
Not at all.
What, cooking and making music? Totally different things?
Well, I mean, I guess they both require creativity and ingredients. Okay, I'm starting to see the analogy.
I don't really see it. I think it was bad and he's trying to save it.
Oh, man.
Let's leave the cooking to the chefs.
Man, we have been trying to just draw this analogy between food and music for like 7 or 8 years.
Okay, so you got your ingredients.
Okay.
And if you don't have quality ingredients, it's not going to work out.
Right, and if you don't have quality synthesizers, you're not going to make a hot track.
Yeah, exactly. But some of the best music I've ever heard has been made on like really bad equipment.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, but what constitutes bad?
I mean, just like, you know, like instruments that people bought at like Walmart or got as gifts, but yet they just did a really great job.
Yeah.
I'm really just trying to lay into Dan's
Yeah, he's got it. He's got it. It's cool.
I'm not buying it.
I'm not totally buying it. I've had a lot of like amazing meals cooked on like things that I wouldn't want to eat.
George Foreman grills?
I've had a lot of, not a lot, but I've had a few.
Yeah, I think Thomas Keller uses them at per se, right?
Wouldn't know.
Really?
Wouldn't know.
I'm just kidding.
But
I'm just kidding.
But Timmy down the hall in college really used it, and he was great.
Timmy Keller. Never mind. So the writing process is a little different. Do you enjoy the solo process and just like figuring, like seeing where your brain takes you with not being edited?
I mean, it's cool because I think the schedule really suits my life. It's like, okay, I have 45 minutes at night now that I have a kid to like get stuff done. So it makes rehearsing and writing a lot more free because I feel like I have this, I can just do it without having to run it by anybody. So I can do it on my own time. Whereas before we'd have to schedule something where we'd all be around, and we mostly did our writing collaboratively. So, you know, that takes a while. This is just more simple, but I do miss them.
Oh, they're amazing women.
I know.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's okay, but
I'm getting used to it.
Yeah. Maybe you can like start like a family band, like the Trachtenbergs.
Do you feel like that's child? I mean, no, I don't know about the Trachtenbergs. I don't know them personally, but do you feel like that whole concept is kind of like child exploitation? Like, I try not to have Henry on any of my public persona things.
I heard Henry actually didn't want to be on your tracks. That's what I read. That's what I read in the trade. But
I feel like it might be like taking advantage.
You don't want to do like a Blue Ivy track with Henry, with the new one.
No, not really. But you know what Henry is really good for? He is just as brutally honest as Heather and Erica.
Really?
Yeah. Like Breathing Underwater, he loved. He wanted to hear it all the time. I looked at my iTunes. I had the demo played like 87 times in the car. For
number one with a bullet, right?
No.
But were there other tracks where he's like, "Mom, no"?
Yeah, he'll. If I play one that's like kind of a downer, he's like, "That's too boring."
Ooh, way harsh.
I know, it's great
kids
though.
They're honest though. It's kind of like nice to hear it. It's refreshing.
Yeah, I'm really into it.
All right, can we hear a track that he likes?
Yeah.
Okay, what is it?
This one doesn't have a name yet.
Can we call it Henry's song?
It's about my this guy I was sleeping with in high school.
Let's definitely not call it Henry's song. Okay. Well, this one goes to. Do you want to say his name?
No.
Well,
he was cheating on his girlfriend.
You were
in high school. He was like, "If you sleep with me, I'm gonna totally break up with her and go out with you." And then I did, and then he didn't. But we still kept on sleeping together.
Still friends.
No.
Godfather. Henry's godfather. No. Here we go. Annie Hart again, live here on Snacky Tunes. Awesome. Very nice.
Well, thanks.
Oh, yeah. So, what's the plan? EP? LP? Double
length? I don't know. What are you supposed to do?
I put out two EPs in my entire life, and they both, no one ever listened to them, so.
Yeah, so are you supposed to, like, hire a publicist and print it and everything?
You're the one with a successful music career.
That's true. Okay, I guess I do know what
you know what you did. You got flown all over the world to play your music.
Yeah.
So you know.
And paid. And not paid. Just the flight. And free food.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, guys. You have
what
to go on
doing?
Tour.
Oh, you went on tour.
We saw you on tour.
Yeah.
Several times.
Yeah. And then you can also make salads in the bathroom in the dark.
Oh, yeah. You remember that story.
That story is so good. You can listen. That's from the last episode with Salad for President.
Oh, yeah.
That was.
I still do that. And, you know, I started taking photos of my hotel salads. It's on my Instagram. Annie Hart for sure. You can see some of my hotel
Annie
salads.
Annie for sure. It's a good gram. The gram game's good.
I was pretty wasted when I came up with it, so thanks.
Whatever works.
Yeah. Whatever's clever, as I say. I don't know. You put an EP out. I mean, you're about to have another kid, so touring is going to be...
Yeah. I haven't played any concerts yet by myself. And I think it's kind of... I want to have like kind of an art element to it, because I'm so used to having Heather and Erica with me, where I'm like, nobody's watching me, so I can just be happy and be relaxed.
Oh, come on. No one's watching you.
But you can like get into that mindset.
Karen's watching.
I'm watching you. Like, not in that way. I'm like, oh, I'm so proud of her. She's doing so well.
Aw. Yeah. I was thinking, I missed my cue for the song.
There's
a police song about that.
Oh.
But anyway.
Yeah. There's a lot of songs about watching people. Like Private Eyes. Yeah. I hung out with my mom the other morning just listening to like Hall & Oates. It was pretty nice.
Okay, so I have this thing with Hall & Oates where until I was maybe 21, I thought their name was Hauling Oates.
Oh my God.
Right? And then I bought my first Hall & Oates thing and I was like, oh, it's Hall and Oates. And then, you know, I just discovered my friend sent me this link. She remembers the story because she thought I was so stupid. And then she sends me the thing. There's a Hall & Oates granola company that's getting sued as of last month by Hall & Oates.
That's so good.
Somebody else had that idea. It's not just me.
There's a thing called Call & Oates, which is a call number where you can call and they like press one, Private Eyes, press two, like
true?
Rich Girl. Yeah.
That's just, like the They Might Be Giants style of song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Stuff when, yeah, it's like, oh, they got a touchdown phone. What can we do?
Yeah. I wish I had a...
Now if only I had songs on demand. I wish that technology still existed.
What did you listen to? Wait a second. What?
I'm making jokes.
I was like, what?
The jokes are so bad. You're on
fire today.
Yeah, on fire.
But maybe that's what I should do with the music.
Yeah, that'd be a fun art project.
Yeah.
Call this number to listen to the track.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I could just put up demos.
Yeah.
And then it's not as permanent as like SoundCloud or whatever, I don't know, Spotify.
It's true.
Or you can just have Henry like them up to the top.
Wow.
Yeah. So you're going to keep recording demos.
Yeah.
You're going to put out the second child.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
And then maybe tour, EP, something like that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to play some shows in New York. I mean, I have a bunch of friends who own really cool venues, so I'm going to have my friend kind of do some kind of overhead art projection while I play, and I'm going to bring all my best synthesizers, which I've been told by synthesizer lovers that I'm forbidden from bringing out of the house.
Oh, really?
Yeah, these synths I'm playing today are great synths, and talk about garbage. One of them is kind of a student start / child model.
My very first synth.
But I got some other really fancy synths that I think deserve to be showcased.
Are you not supposed to take them out of the house?
No, I mean, they're so delicate. They're the kind of thing that are made for studios. Like, I bet Genesis wouldn't even tour with them.
Uh-oh.
Are those fighting words?
I don't know. Phil Collins, I mean, Phil, look, Phil's going to do what Phil's going to do. You know what I mean?
Usually there's synths at home.
Yeah. All right. Well, where can people go to SoundCloud?
Oh, yeah. It's SoundCloud/Annie-Hart. There's other Annie Harts out there that are not me.
Imitations not to be trusted.
Yeah.
How do we know it's you?
How do you know it's me? There's a picture of me with sunglasses.
Okay.
Cool mom. Super cool mom.
Super cool mom.
Man, that wedding happening in the backyard.
Yeah, there's a crazy, awesome wedding going on.
No, that was my applause button for super cool mom.
Yeah.
Well, no, they're with you. They like totally agree. It's all family all the time.
They did
a
acapella version of "Don't Stop Believing," which, yeah.
All right, let's wrap.
They also didn't they also sing "Gloria in Excelsis Deo"? When I walked in, they were singing like Christmas carols.
Maybe
they were doing all the Jewish wedding songs.
Hey man,
out there,
it's your wedding is whatever you want to do.
Yeah,
yeah,
it'll be yours next March 27th.
I'm gonna just plan it around. Just
do I get to go to your wedding,
dude? Ooh. You're gonna come to the bachelor party.
That's true. I was speaking to somebody. I have a friend who the other day he got to go to a bachelor party, but he wasn't invited to that guy's wedding.
That doesn't make any sense.
It made no sense.
He must have really fucked up during the bachelor party.
Yeah.
I think I don't think it was ever part of the plan. I just thought that was really strange.
Essentially, what I've learned that if you invite anyone to the pre-wedding events,
you have to invite them
party,
for the big
party,
deal.
They got to come to the
main
big
event.
Yeah, to the main event.
Yes.
I want to know what that was.
I'll tell you a little bit more about it offline.
Oh, okay. Wow. No, you'll be coming. And there's an engagement party. We're going to go to Montreal. It'll be fun.
I can't imagine what going to Montreal with you might be like.
Yes, you can, because we did it, and it was deliciously decadent, if you will.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Poutine
was
forever.
I know, it was the craziest blizzard I've ever experienced.
We drove into Montreal the day after the largest single snowfall
ever. And for Montreal, that's a lot.
Wait, so it happened the day after?
No, the day before.
Oh, the day before.
Yeah. And we were driving around, and we eventually just had to shovel out a parking spot. We were like driving. We got in like 1 at night, and we went and got like
so much shoveling snow that weekend.
Dozen hot Saint Vitor bagels,
and then
we were living. The place we had was equidistant from Fairmont Saint Vitor.
Oh my god, I used to live like right around in that area.
Very lucky.
Very lucky.
Yeah, I know. And we would just every day try out each different bagel and decide which one is our favorite, but
let's see, today I'll have a sesame, and then tomorrow I'll have a sesame, and then the day after that I'll have a sesame.
And they're so small, it's like you can just eat as many as you want.
Oh yeah,
they don't even count as bagels.
No, not like these behemoth New York ones.
No,
we don't have enough time to talk about New York bagels.
We can do a whole Montreal edition of this show one day.
Yeah,
you know what I'm looking for in New York? Hot pretzels. When are we going to start the gourmet hot pretzel brigade?
I don't know. I think people still are bummed on carbs. Right?
No.
I don't know.
I think there's a carb backlash.
I don't know. A hot pretzel and mustard bar would be phenomenal.
It's true.
Doing sandwiches. They used to ever go to Philly and they have like sort of like a figure eight pretzels and you cut those in half and you make that. That's your bread for a sandwich.
No.
Did I just explode your mind?
You know, everybody's always like, oh, Philly's the next Williamsburg. And now I'm
not
kind
true.
Of...
Not true.
Right. Well, obviously it's not true, but now, but don't you, aren't you like intrigued a little by Philly?
I grew up in Philly.
I love Philly.
Oh, you
I love
grew up
Philly.
In Philly.
I love it.
Philly's wonderful.
It's no sixth borough.
Well, we know, the New York Times keeps telling me every day that the sixth borough is Los Angeles.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
There was another article today about New Yorkers packing up and going to Los Angeles.
I saw that. But
who
you know
does
what?
That? Who packs up and moves to
all
LA?
All my friends, because
I don't know.
Like...
Maybe you, jerk. Whatever. Have fun. Take your beard out there.
Take your beard out there. Go say hi to everybody. I'm always like, oh, I haven't seen you in a couple months. Let's hang out. I'm in LA.
Constant. You have full permission to punch me in the face of Travis and I by matching fedoras.
I'm not going to punch you in the face. Whatever. You know, just have fun.
Just have fun. Have fun in that fedora. Maybe I'll get a bucket hat. I don't know. So many options.
You're definitely getting cargo pants.
We're KFC bucket.
Yeah, definitely getting some cargo
pants,
shorts.
Some Tevas.
Oh, yeah. Guess what? My toes are going to get so tan out there.
Such a jerk.
All right. Well, we have time for one more song.
Oh, really?
Do you not want to play one more song?
I mean, I could.
Well, you're not.
It's kind of a downer song.
That's fine.
Is that okay?
Yeah. We'll just tell Henry not to listen. I want to thank you. Thank you to Brutal Mag, Joe and Nick, Feeding the Fire. And on May 12th, we return for our 8th season of the Barbecue Blowout. We have the wonderful boys of Greenpoint Fish and Lobster Co.
Shout out Adam and Vinny.
Shout out to those two guys doing grilled fish tacos with Gustavo Salsa. And Gustavo is going to be on Snacky Tunes next week. And we have the wonderful men of Turing Machine, Justin and Scott, throwing to the decks down. It's a good tradition.
It's the kickoff to summer.
It's the kickoff to summer. May 12th. Ticket sales are actually really awesome. So
they should be.
You can go to
heritageradionetwork.org
and look for the Barbecue Blowout poster. Or if you go to BBQ Blowout May 2015.eventbrite.com.
Nobody's going to remember that.
Just go to heritagenetwork.org and you can see the poster. Liz's thumbs up to that. Shaking her head at the... other stuff.
She's really just like the master today.
She was like, wait, if I just speak to them with a voice of authority, they're going to do whatever I say. We're like, yes, Liz. I'm sorry, Liz. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. What? Oh, my God. Psyching me out. Well, Annie, thank you so much. Carter, thank you as always.
Pleasure.
Shout out to the fam. Shout out to Anna. We'll see you next week and enjoy the summer. Here we go. Thank you.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.